This podcast is intended for investment professionals only. All investing involves risk.
Hello and welcome to Market Talk, where today we'll be discussing the recent rise in volatility, the Treasury yield curve, and the US Fed's next move. So as the school gates reopen after the summer holiday, sitting at the front of the class is me, Harry Brooks, and holding the chalk is Ben Bennett, Head of Investment Strategy for Asia, who joins us today from Hong Kong. Ben, how's things? It's not been the most relaxing summer break in markets, has it?
Well, I remember I was writing research for investment banks years ago, and we'd always sort of wait until we got the quiet period of summer, and we'd be able to title the research note the summer lull. I seem to remember it happening for like 6-7 weeks, you know, a few years ago, but I think we had maybe like 10 days of summer lull in August, but it was a bit quiet, but it was definitely sandwiched by a fair amount of volatility. So yeah, lots to talk about, I think.
Yeah, absolutely. So let's kick off by talking about that volatility, which, as you say, has really kept investors on their toes over the summer. And it seems to be continuing as we enter autumn now. At the start of August, of course, we had that really big sell-off as the Japanese carry trade unwound. And then last week, we saw another slightly smaller wobble with AI chipmaker Nvidia taking a hit and leading the tech stocks down in the US, much like we saw in the previous bout of selling. So what do these two episodes have in common, and what do they tell us about the broader mood in markets at the moment?
Yeah, I think that's the pertinent question, because it felt, as you say, two separate sell-offs. And, you know, talking to my US colleagues, they almost didn't notice the Japanese flash crash at the beginning of August, which I definitely noticed here in Hong Kong, because during the morning here, you know, the Nikkei, I think the topics was down 12% on one day. So it was a huge move, but it had sort of settled down by the evening, by the time that the US came in. And then I guess the US had its own, as you said, tech-led correction at the beginning of September. I think the germination of both is that we have had all year quite a steady momentum for markets in terms of the Magnificent Seven doing pretty well all year. And then also a trade, which people call it the carry trade. People just sort of bandy that name around. But what we're talking about really is investors, for example, Japanese investors borrowing in a cheap currency at low interest rates, like the yen, very low interest rates in Japan. And the yen was depreciating. So you're borrowing something that was getting cheaper, which is brilliant, isn't it? That's what you want to do. And then using that, buying something with higher yield, which was appreciating, like dollar assets. That's basically what they were doing. And that works perfectly well as long as the thing you're borrowing is going down in value and has got low interest rates, and as long as the thing you're buying is going up and has got high interest rates. But what we have seen over the last few weeks is a slight change in that. So we had a interest rate hike by the Bank of Japan, so that makes it more expensive to borrow yen. And we've had a little bit of weaker data in the US. No, nothing to worry about too much, but certainly the jobs data has been a little bit weak. We had a couple of jobs reports. The one just before the Japanese flash crash was probably the one of the main catalysts. And that meant that we're now really expecting the Federal Reserve to cut interest rates. So again, the thing that you're buying has got lower interest rates, lower yields, so maybe a little bit less attractive. And it doesn't take much if you've built up a huge amount of momentum over a long period of time. These trades have been very popular. So I guess it didn't take that much for them to be undermined a bit. And I really think that's probably what was going on. Now, I would still say that what we've got is a wobble rather than, you know, the end of this trade or the end of strong markets. I was looking at the S&P 500 just because, you know, that's what people tend to quote when they look at sort of risky assets. So the S&P 500, from the highs, the recent highs in the middle of July, up until the end of that first wobble on the 5th of August, lost over 8%. So that was a decent wobble, but it recovered almost all of that through the rest of August. And then it had this other second wobble in the beginning of September, which is a drawdown of about 4%. But again, there's a little bit of a recovery since then. I mean, we're taping this on Tuesday, the 10th of September. So, you know, we've had a little bit of a recovery since then. And it's still up nearly 15% on the year. So it's just wobbling, but yeah, still having done pretty well so far this year.
I suppose one other silver lining during those two sell-offs that we talked about was that perceived safe haven assets like government bonds rallied, giving multi-asset investors a bit of a cushion this time around. I'm thinking back to 2022 when we had that big surge in inflation, led to an awful year for investors with virtually all big assets declining all at once. And as far as I remember, back then, commodities were pretty much the only bright spot. How are they faring in today's more growth-focused climate?
Yeah, let's talk about commodities in a second. Just go back to what you were saying before, which I think is really, really important. The fact that the equity wobble has coincided this time around with bonds doing pretty well. In effect, bond yields falling, so bond prices going up. And as you quite rightly point out, that's the perfect situation for a multi-asset portfolio. You want to hold bonds as a bit of a protection, don't you, for your equity position? So that if you get bad news, like we have had with some US data, that can negatively impact the S&P 500, but it should lead to your bonds offsetting that. And that has happened. So that's, you know, from a portfolio positioning point of view, you know, that makes it more sensible to hold those long bond positions, those long duration positions as protection, something that was a total disaster in 2022, as you say. Yeah, in terms of commodities, yeah, we have not seen that ramp up in commodities that we have seen in the past. In fact, commodities have been pretty weak, which I think speaks volumes about the slightly weaker data that we've had as well. So US data a little bit weaker, little bits of European weakness as well, particularly in Germany. And then China just has all just failed to pick up still. It has the one consistent thing this year, really, that it's Chinese growth has just been a little bit subdued. So that's just being priced in. Brent oil, for example, as of taping this, this was a close on Monday, that was trading just above $70 a barrel, $71 a barrel. And that's down 20% from the July high. Funnily enough, roughly the same time as I was talking about the S&P high, that was also when the commodities were peaking. So that suggests that there is some link there. Same with some industrial commodities, iron ore, steel, also pretty weak. So I think there's a bit of demand side. There is also some supply side story there too. So Libya, we might see some of the Libyan supply come on tap, because there seems to be a thawing in the issues that there are there in terms of problems getting that onto the market. So that's part of it. But I do think it is linked to the demand, linked to a bit of the weakness, linked to what I was saying before about the S&P and general risk assets.
Okay, so something else that we saw last week was the US Treasury yield curve becoming uninverted for the first time in 2 years. For the benefit of any listeners out there who, like me, have forgotten anything they might once have known about markets over the holiday, can you remind us what this actually means in really simple terms?
Yeah, well, it's funny. When I write disinvert or disinversion on Word, it always comes up as a spelling mistake. I think that's something that is yet to get into the Oxford English Dictionary for some reason, but maybe it'll be the word of the year. But yeah, so what we're talking about is a yield curve. So let's say the 2-year Treasury yield versus the 10-year Treasury yield. Normally, the 10-year Treasury will be a bit higher than the 2-year Treasuries. That's just saying that we think maybe interest rates will go up over time, or there's some risk premium for taking a little bit longer dated risk in longer dated duration. You should be expecting a little bit higher yield if you lock it in for 10 years as opposed to 2 years. That's what normally happens. Now, when people are worried that there's going to be an economic downturn in the future, you can often see, so before a recession, for example, you often see that 10-year yield going below the 2-year. And that's just investors betting, I suppose, investing as if they are expecting yields, basically the Fed, to cut rates in the future, a couple of years' time. And they'll be doing that because they think, well, yields are too high right now, the economy is slowing, and in the future they'll need to cut interest rates. And often the curve inverts, that 10-year goes below the 2-year, maybe 1 or 2 years before you get a recession. It's a sort of signal that a recession, that investors are worried about a recession going forward. So that's what we saw a couple of years ago. The curve inverted back in July 2022, and now it's just come out of that inversion. So the 10-year has just gone higher than the 2-year just a couple of days ago. So it's the first time that we've gone to a normal, I guess, a steep curve where the 10-year is above the 2-year.
Okay, that all makes sense. I think you've sort of anticipated my next question here, but what does history tell us about this point where the yield curve goes back to normal or uninverted after a period of being inverted? Is this something that investors should be celebrating, or by the sounds of it, it might be a bit of a flag that there's potentially more trouble ahead?
Well, so when the curve inverts, that's when investors are worried potentially about a recession. So that, like I said, that was back in July 2022. And you'd remember we spent most of 2022 and 2023 talking about a US recession, which hasn't materialized. So I've seen a few headlines about the fact that the curve has now stopped being inverted. So we've got the 10-year now above the 2-year. So that means that the recession is definitely not happening. It was a false signal. We can get back to normal life. Actually, unfortunately, that's not how it works. So the curve is inverted for maybe a few quarters before the recession. But when the recession hits, normally the curve suddenly steepens up. And that's because basically the Federal Reserve gets its act together and slashes interest rates because they're worried about growth. That's what happened in 2008, for example. The curve was inverted before, and the Federal Reserve cut interest rates as soon as, you know, they saw the problems about the world and the US housing market. So the 2-year yield collapsed because the Federal Reserve was cutting interest rates and you get a steeper curve. So actually the steepening is a signal that the recession might well be upon us. Now, that's not our base case. We do not think right now that the US is in a recession. We've had some slightly soggy data, but we think this is more of a normalization as opposed to the Federal Reserve panicking and having to cut interest rates. But like I said, it's not necessarily a green flag to say everything is fine. It's still an ambiguous signal.
Okay, well, sticking with US economic data, next week, of course, we'll learn how the Federal Reserve feels about the state of the economy and whether it needs to crank its dial with a big cut or just edge the temperature up a little bit. What are markets telling us now about what might happen at next week's meeting? And also in subsequent ones in November and December.
Yeah, so this is really the story that brings everything together that we've been talking about here. So the Federal Reserve, as you say, is meeting, they are meeting next week on Tuesday, Wednesday, and on Wednesday they'll announce their policy decision. Now, it's widely anticipated for all the reasons we've been discussing that they will start their rate cuts next week. Now, they think, and we think, they're doing it from a position of relative strength. The economy is actually okay. It's just slowing. So maybe you just need to dial it down a bit. So our best guess and the most likely result, if you look at market pricing, is that they will cut by 25 basis points, so 0.25%. So just a little bit. There is a chance, a non-zero chance, that they will cut by 50 basis points. Now, we've just had some data last week on the US payrolls, you know, basically the employment report, which was okay, which suggested probably 25 will do. We do get this week, and I think it'll already be out by the time that we publish this podcast, so, you know, everyone will know what it is, but inflation, CPI in the US, core CPI, I guess if that really falls significantly, that would bring 50 basis points into play as well. But yeah, I think they'll probably just dab the brakes, or however you described it, just to slightly edge the temperature up, I think it was what you said. And, you know, they've got two more meetings after this year. They always have the opportunity, if the economy does slow down, if that recession risk starts to become more of an issue. And actually, I think if they cut by 50 basis points, there's a risk that they unnerve investors to some degree. You know, investors might think, well, what does the Fed know that we don't know? Why are they cutting by more than we expect? Why are they cutting by 50 basis points and not 25 basis points? And that could actually lead to a bit of a negative reaction in markets, possibly. So that's another reason why I think the Fed might just cut by 25 basis points and just do the median and not worry anyone.
Interesting. Okay. And how about Europe's central banks? Looking at their calendar of meetings on my screen here, I can see that they're due to announce their rate decision, I think, just a couple of hours after this podcast comes out. What are the data points that Christine Lagarde and her colleagues over at the ECB will have been focused on recently?
Yeah, so the ECB have already started to cut, and they are doing the very tentative cutting. So they cut two meetings ago by 25 basis points. Then they paused last meeting, and now they're expected to cut again by 25 basis points. So tentative. They didn't get the interest rates up as high as the Fed did in the first place. So they haven't got as much to play with. And they also, you know, there is still inflation hanging around, sticky inflation. It's coming down globally, but, you know, the ECB has historically been a little bit more nervous about sticky inflation, so they probably don't want to slash interest rates and risk just propelling inflation high and stoking the economy too much. So they probably will cut by just 25 basis points. I do think it's interesting when you look at the Eurozone and you know, there's obviously lots of different countries there, lots of different economies doing different things. The biggest economy, Germany, is not doing very well at all. I mean, the industrial production is quite weak there. The manufacturing sector, which is a big part of the German economy, isn't doing great. I think they've got a link to China that, you know, is obviously weighing on them because China is relatively subdued. So if it was just Germany making policy, maybe they would be cutting by more. But again, you know, in the Eurozone, you have to deal with all the different economies. So that's why they're probably being a bit more tentative and not cutting by too much.
Here in the UK, we're going to have to wait until next week to find out what our central bank decides to do next. And I understand that keeping rates at 5% is what's priced by markets. It feels like the Bank of England is being tentative, to use your word, compared with the US, maybe more similar to Europe. Is that a fair assessment?
It is. And there's, okay, so UK inflation this year has again been a bit mixed. We have had a few sticky prints, which, you know, suggests that perhaps inflation in the UK is a little bit more set in stone than it is in the US again. So you just have to be a bit wary about that. And then we've got the politics of it all, of course, you know, new government. I've seen headlines, we've all seen headlines, haven't we, about the wages that are being agreed to in the public sector. So the Bank of England have got to factor that in. You know, if wages are going to be increasing, that generally leads to more inflation. And of course, there is a budget coming due fairly soon as well. So I guess that's probably behind some of the reasons why they might not cut in their next meeting in a couple of weeks' time. But again, they might cut as well, 25 basis points. And they're not alone. We've spoken about the Federal Reserve. We've spoken about the ECB. I think they are all influenced by each other to a degree. So, you know, if the Federal Reserve cuts by 50 basis points, the ECB cuts by 25, I think that makes it more likely that the Bank of England then cuts as well. But yeah, it's not a slam dunk.
Okay, well, sticking with tradition, let's round out today's podcast with that familiar question. Ben, what's your number of the week?
Yeah, well, we haven't spoken about China very much today. In fact, the only times I've spoken about China is the fact that it's been still relatively weak, subdued activity. So I thought I'd end on a positive for China. So my number of the week is plus 15%. And I think this, people wouldn't guess this, but that is the total return of a high yield bond, China high yield bond index. So these are, you know, bonds that have been terrible for a couple of years, property developer bonds that have all gone bust. But I guess in 2024, despite not much good news, the valuations got low enough such that it took no more terrible news for the market to recover a little bit. And 15% is nothing to be sniffed at. It's basically the same return as the S&P 500 as we're taping here. So, you know, that's pretty good. And that's in the same context as Chinese equity markets not doing well. I mean, the CSI 300, which is an onshore China mainland equity market, that's down 7% this year. So really, it's just been the those China high yield bonds. Now, these bonds are still down tremendously from the peaks from a few years ago. So it is really just a little bounce from the lows. But it just shows you that things can't go down forever. And there's always a valuation argument. Things, even if the fundamentals are bad, things can still go up. But that works both ways, though. Just to say a word of warning, you know, if you think fundamentals are fabulous in a certain industry, say the AI sector, technology sector, but things will not go up forever. And those are some of the wobbles that we've seen this month as well, isn't it? So that's just a word of warning. There's always a valuation aspect to everything that we do here.
Excellent. Well, thanks so much for talking to me today, Ben. And thanks to all our listeners at home as well.
As a reminder, this podcast is intended for investment professionals only and shouldn't be shared with a non-professional audience. The views expressed in this podcast are those of Legal & General Investment Management Limited, as at the date of publication. This podcast is for information purposes only, and we are not soliciting any action based on it. The information discusses general economic, market or political issues and/or industry or sector trends. It does not constitute research or investment, legal or tax advice. It is not an offer or recommendation or advertisement to buy or sell securities or pursue a particular investment strategy. Assumptions, opinions, and estimates are provided for illustrative purposes only. There is no guarantee that any forecast made will come to pass. No party shall have any right of action against Legal & General in relation to the accuracy or completeness of the information contained in this podcast. Where this document contains third-party information, the accuracy and completeness of such information cannot be guaranteed, and we accept no responsibility or liability in respect of such information, not for distribution to any person resident in any jurisdiction where such distribution would be contrary to local law or regulation. Copyright 2024. Legal & General Investment Management Limited is authorised and regulated by the Financial Conduct Authority. In Hong Kong, this material is issued by Legal & General Investment Management Asia Limited, regulated by the Hong Kong Securities and Futures Commission. For full terms and conditions, please visit our website. To find more content, you can check us out on X, formerly known as Twitter, LinkedIn, and our website.